I don't know why when you said that, I imagined myself as a giant bat flying over the city, but it sounds cool.
You know, it's your imagination. It's your, you know, your identity, dude. You, yeah. You do
your name, your name, your identity.
Welcome to Beyond the Screams. I am your host, Steph, and with me are my usual co-hosts, Holly and Patrick.
Hello.
Hello.
In honor of celebrating Native Americans and Indigenous folk, we're talking about Canadian zombie film Blood Quantum. In 1981, the dead are coming back to life outside the isolated Mi'kmaq Reserve of Red Crow, except for its Indigenous inhabitants, who are strangely immune to the zombie plague. This movie was written and directed by Jeff Barnaby, a Mi'kma'ki who was born on a Mi'kmaq Reserve. Holly, am I destroying Mi'kmaq?
From what I have gathered, it's more like Mi'kmaq. Sorry, I'm going to commandeer Stephanie's intro for a second. So it was, the word comes from a word, I think it would be pronounced Nigma, which means my friends, but the French who were there like colonizing and everything, they mistook that as their name. The people actually had referred to themselves as Olnug, but the French didn't understand them. So when it came to writing down their names, they tried to do it as phonetically as possible. So I didn't read much more into like the phonetics and like, you know, French grammar and how like their sounds are, but it has something to do with that.
I'll leave it to the fucking French. Yeah, trying to learn these words was very, or like just pronounce these words was very difficult in the research for this episode. So if we butcher any of them, I'm very sorry.
Yeah. This movie was written and directed by Jeff Barnaby, a Mi'kma'ki who was born on a reserve in Listigouge, Quebec, which was one of the filming locations.
Quebec.
Yeah. This movie stars Michael Grey Eyes as Trailer. I'm so sorry, but I'm going to say Elijah Tailfeathers as Joss, Forrest Goodluck as Joseph, Kiowa Gordon as Lysol, and Olivia Scriven as Charlie.
Michael Trailer, or sorry, the guy that plays Trailer, he's in The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Forrest Goodluck, who plays Joseph, was in The Revenant. He plays the kid or something.
Yep. Leonardo DiCaprio's son.
Patrick, do you have a budget for this movie?
It was $5.5 million. This was the largest budget for an Indigenous person's film ever, which is really sad.
Yeah, think about
that. They're so underfunded.
Think about that for a second. $5.5 million. The highest budget.
Yes, the highest. They ran out of money towards the end of this film, and they had to stop production and try to get more money. Because there's some weird rule in Canada about filming, which we can get into later on. But yeah, this is the largest budget, which is really sad. I'm glad that they were able to obtain $5.5 million, and you know what they did with that money is like, it looks like it's a much higher budget than they had. But man, if they had $10 million, what would they have done? What would have been different?
Right?
Yeah, the practical effects were great. The sets were great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in this interview with Jeff Barnaby, he talked about how when he was making this movie, he looked at CGI and he was just like, they promise so much and deliver so little, so we went with practical effects.
And it looks so good.
And I was like, my man.
Right?
Yes, so much better.
Yeah.
So much better. So the film's title, Blood Quantum, refers to blood quantum laws, which have been used in the U.S. and Canada to determine indigeneity based on the percentage of one's indigenous ancestry. Holly,
yeah.
You want to talk to us about blood quantum?
Yeah, so I'm finding that a lot of people don't know what blood quantum is. People might know it better as being referred to as measuring how much, quote, Indian blood you have. So it was first officially used by the government and the Bureau of Indian Affairs after the passage of the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, aka the Indian Welfare Act. That was passed in order to give Native tribes more power into governing themselves and a way to give some more rights back to the natives after, you know, the whole genocide thing happened.
Yeah.
So prior to that, it was basically used to limit the amount of civil rights for Native Americans. Like, they would round people up and figure out, like, all right, who are your parents? What is your lineage? If you had half or more blood, then you were considered Native American. You would be, you know, in the system listed as Native American. However, if you were half or less Native blood, then you were not classified as Native American. So you could be, you know, a quarter and, you know, live with your tribe and be on your indigenous land and still not be classified as Native American. Some tribes do still use it. A lot use it in conjunction with other factors like lineage through a tribe. I was reading an article on NPR. It says even if you are using blood quantum as a qualifier to be included in a tribe, it also depends how the tribes use blood quantum. So, for instance, the Navajo Nation requires a minimum of 25%, quote, Navajo blood, and Turtle Mountain requires a minimum of 25% of any Indian blood as long as it's in combination with some Turtle Mountain. So, you know, over the years, as these poor people were, like, you know, fleeing from being killed and everything, they were intermixing with other tribes. And so if you were like half one tribe and half the other tribe, you might not even count for any of them, you know? And in my personal experience, I did a DNA test about maybe 6 years ago. I have 46% Native American blood. And I have since learned that I believe it was my grandfather came from Pueblo, Mexico, migrated up to the Pueblo area of New Mexico. I was like, cool. Like, I'm just curious about, like, you know, finding that out about myself. I just recently read that the Pueblo tribe is lowering its blood quantum. So it used to be half, now it's a quarter, but it's still, you still need like direct lineage or, you know, a vouch from somebody in the tribe or be living, you know, on a reservation or something. There are so many different things. And I understand now why it's still used, because I mean, there are so many people who want to say like, oh, I'm, you know, 1/84th, whatever, like, give me some kind of benefit. I'm sure not everybody is like that, but Native Americans have been so like basically almost killed out that it's like you do have to hang on to some kind of blood status. Interracial marriage, I mean, it's a thing. So, I mean, there's no such thing as like pure blood, you know? It gets so diluted and it's just became such a stupid, ridiculous thing that was a way to hurt Native Americans, and now it's just hurting them in a kind of a different sense.
It's so strange, like, that idea that the blood quantum, like, for me, just being, you know, a white male from Southern California, excluding smaller portions of your own people that don't meet the blood requirements, so they can't get benefits, but you have to do it because there are people that will be like, oh, I am 1/84th this, so mm-hmm. I deserve it. It's really fucked up.
Yeah.
When it started, it was a tool of oppression.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Identifying people as, are you white or are you not white?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you Jewish or not Jewish?
Exactly.
It's the same shit.
Yep. And I mean, I've heard this story from people who are biracial, of white and black descent. They feel like this isn't across the board for everybody, but the people I've spoke to, they feel like they don't belong because, like, you know, my black friends don't see me as black enough. My white friends see me as, you know, too black. And it's like, you don't, you're just stuck. And it really sucks.
Yeah, especially to be on the fence of complete opposites, you know, like accepted, not accepted, hated, mm-hmm. not hated.
Yeah.
Like, I really feel for people who have to deal with that, like, identity crisis.
This is a very fun horror movie with some heavy topics. Just going to lay that out now.
It really is fun.
It is a very fun movie.
We can spend the rest of the podcast unpacking all of these things. I don't want to say things, but...
Oh, all these ancient issues.
Yes, if you are curious about the history of this, look up Blood Quantum Laws, look up the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, Trail of Tears. Go read that. You will find a whole rabbit hole to go down because, unfortunately, there is a lot.
And unfortunately, they do not teach you this in school.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend enough going down that rabbit hole because, yeah, Patrick, this stuff wasn't taught in school.
No.
I think about Thanksgiving and the reason why we're highlighting and focusing on Indigenous folk is because November is the month of, like, Thanksgiving, and how incorrect Thanksgiving was taught versus the reality of what it was and what it still is today and the effect of colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Blood Quantum was filmed in 2018, primarily at the Kahnawake and Listigouge reserves in Quebec and the city of Campbellton, New Brunswick, which is right across the river. This is actually Jeff Barnaby's second film. So his first one, Rhymes for Young Ghouls, was made before Blood Quantum, but actually the script for Blood Quantum was written before Rhymes for Young Ghouls. And he was able to get funding for Blood Quantum because he did Rhymes for Young Ghouls and kind of made a little bit of a name for himself. You'll see that this film is available to watch on Shudder, and it's like a Shudder original, which I was confused by because I was like, wait, what? What does that even mean, a Shudder original? The film was acquired for international distribution on Shudder streaming service in 2019 with Canadian streaming rights to be held by Crave. So Shudder's just like, we're just going to slap a Shudder original on it.
Yeah, they're doing the old Netflix thing.
I swear, I don't know if I'm making this up or not, but I thought it had something to do with whether or not they're able to stream something, quote, first, like on a major streaming site. Like if they get it and it's like, that's the only platform they're able to call it a Shudder original, but now that it's on Amazon too, I don't know how that still works. But I thought that's how it had that.
But it's also on iTunes.
Well, yeah. Maybe I made it up. I thought it. I mean, it makes sense to me in my head, so. But I don't know.
I thought that, like, Shudder put money to produce this, but they just bought rights to put it on their streaming service, and there's nothing original to Shudder about this movie.
No.
Yeah, it's the old Netflix.
Yeah,
model.
Again, like, if somebody wants to, like, chime in and let us know definitively, I swear it has something to do with them, like, being able to stream something first. So if you know, let us know.
And Shudder, if you want to chime in and just support us in any ways, we could be original too.
Okay. I also want to watch Rhymes for Young Ghouls because it looks really good and it showcases the terror that were residential schools, which I had no idea were a thing, but holy cow.
I was telling you guys earlier, I was looking up so many just terrible things that have happened to the First Nation. And then I, you know, looked into the Rhymes for Young Ghouls and heard about the residential schools. I started looking into it and I was like, I need to save this for another day. It was just too much. Too much just sadness and just, you know, it takes so much for a day.
Yeah.
This movie's not sad. It is very fun.
It is. But when you get into the behind the fun, it's sad.
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the biggest influences on this movie was a documentary called The Incident at Restigouche. Oh. Okay. This documentary, which we're also going to include a link to, y'all have to watch it. Blood Quantum opens with a dead fish coming back to life, signaling the zombie apocalypse and alluding to when the Quebec Provincial Police, QPP, raided Restigouche Reserve twice in June of 1981. And they did that to limit their fishing rights, but they never placed limitations on commercial fishing. Okay, real quick. So the Minister of Fisheries, Lucien Lessard, via telex demanded the natives to remove all of their fishing nets within 36 hours or face the consequences. His reasoning for this is that where they place their nets restricts the salmon from reproducing or something. So he wanted to limit the Mi'kmaq to fishing 36 hours a week versus their 72 hours a week. Now, these are folks who have been fishing forever.
Yup.
They literally taught the white people how to fish.
Yeah.
And they're like, we've been doing this forever. We are not preventing any reproduction, anything. We are in balance with the world. And we're, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, so where this is in Quebec is like right across the river from New Brunswick. So on the New Brunswick side of the river, the federal government lifted restrictions on commercial fishing. So it was like, go for it, New Brunswick. And to get an idea of how much fish is being caught in a year, the New Brunswick commercial fishing caught 109 tons. The fisheries in other Atlantic provinces and international Greenland areas caught 3,285 tons, which that is where all the salmon comes from. So they're intercepting all the salmon on their way to spawn in Canada. Sport fishermen, okay, in Quebec and New Brunswick took over 800 tons, okay, for sport. No one's like limiting them. Meanwhile, all the native folk along the east took a total of, can you guys guess? Guess how many tons?
Nowhere near the amount.
22 no. tons, of which 6 tons were taken by the Mi'kmaq. Six tons.
800 tons went to a lot of vain pictures and mounting on walls.
Yep. Meanwhile, the native folk are eating this fish, selling this fish, surviving off of this fish.
Yeah, it's their livelihood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just fucking terrible.
Yeah.
That's capitalism.
It's like, I'm sorry, if we have our nets somewhere that's impeding this, guess whose fault it was? It's yours because you probably relocated us, so cool.
Capitalists cannot look at anything without a price tag on it.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
It really is.
So the QPP brought like 90 police officers and raided this like reserve of people who are just living their lives, doing what they do. They're not breaking any laws, and they just destroy nets. They set up a barricade on the bridge, which you'll see throughout the movie that the bridge is a common character who keeps showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Barnaby witnessed these raids. This movie, Blood Quantum, takes place in 1981. The documentarian does an amazing job, and she totally has a great conversation with this Minister of Fisheries, especially when he's trying to claim sovereignty over Quebec. And she's like, I'm sorry, what?
What?
And he's like, oh, do you want to claim Montreal? And she's like, bitch, yes, I do. This is our land.
God.
Oh, okay. On to the movie.
It opens with some text that was really cool. It was a bit hard to... It was like red text on black background, which...
With a weird fade transition.
I'm usually, you know, red on black. I'm the biggest fan of whatever. But this was like really dark and it was very hard to read. I had to like pause it to read it and like shift my lighting. I was like, what's going on here? Yeah, and it's like a weird shifty transition through the middle of it. So I'll read it as both paragraphs are separate.
Yeah, I had to rewind it and I was like,
in the middle of the paragraph. I was like, what's going on? So it says, take heed to thyself that thou make no treaty with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be because of ruin among you. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, and burn down their groves. Then the second paragraph is, take heed to thyself that thou make no treaty with the inhabitants of the land. For when they whore themselves to their demons and sacrifice to them, you will eat their sacrifices. And when you choose some of their daughters for your sons, they will lead your sons to do the same. And that was a colonial proverb.
Yeah, a colonial settler proverb.
Yeah, it's like, cool. That's fun.
Really, really set an example for...
I know, right? I thought you were coming over here. Yeah, I thought you were coming here for Jesus and stuff.
You know? That's the biggest hypocrite, right? It's like freedom of religion, but it must be our religion.
Exactly. Yep.
It's just like our fucking government right now.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I totally understand why people are like, burn it down. Because it's like,
yeah,
settlers, colonial, like, they burned it all down.
They literally walked in and they were like, get out of our land, if they just literally getting off the boats to these poor.
Yeah, it's like if you just walk into somebody's house and be like, get out, it's my house. Like, what the fuck? No.
You know, I don't usually like home invasion movies, but colonialism is the old school home invasion movie.
Yeah.
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 Hi, we're going to break in. We're going to terrorize you. And you know what? We may stay or we may just leave. We don't care. Whatever.
Yeah, there was no gathering a giant feast and handing each other corn.
All right.
Oh, no.
I baked you a pie.
Yeah. If I could read to you the way my high school described the Trail of Tears to what I learned out of high school.
Oh, no.
Woo! What a difference.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Back to the movie. We're on the first scene.
Stick with us, folks. This is...
Sorry.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of research went into this episode. So we're all in a weird mental space right now.
Yeah. We're here to educate you heathens.
Also, like, this movie is like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an hour and a half, but there's a ton of characters. It's almost like a Game of Thrones. And there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the pacing's really good for the first 75% of the movie, so you get through it really quickly.
Yeah. You'll enjoy this movie way more after, like, hearing us give you all the terrible details and inspiration behind it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Our OG grandpa character gets a fish, guts it, thinks it's dead, but it's actually alive. And then it fades into an animation of nature versus industry with a pregnant woman on top of a rock with luscious green vibes connected to her and a baby in the water. There were some animations throughout this movie that I thought were like kind of cool transitions, more
symbolic
metaphors.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, the animations too. And the drawings are beautiful. They
really
absolutely
good.
Gorgeous. And... yeah, I definitely saw them as transitions. I think great metaphor, too, that this beginning animation completely comes full circle to the end of the movie. So I'll bring up my thoughts on this first animation at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
We then meet Trailer, the local sheriff of Red Crow and native folk, and his ex, Josh, who's a nurse. Their son, Joseph, got picked up by police with his half-brother, Alan, who goes by Lysol. What the heck kind of nickname is that?
I don't know.
Bad one. So, Trailer and Joss were having this conversation about the boys being picked up. There's also a lot to unpack with this dialogue, too. So, there's a comment that Trailer makes. He says that he thinks his dad is a fuck-up. It gives him a free pass. Again, this is a broad overview of people. This is not indicative of everybody, but genetically, Native Americans are predisposed to things like addiction, like substance abuse, that kind of addiction, higher disease rate, like heart disease, cancer, also has to do with where they live, too. Because of this unprocessed trauma that generations of people have had to deal with, it comes out in self-destructive ways. Unfortunately, when people are in a self-destructive environment, you know, abusive family, what have you, sometimes people do have that idea of like, look at where I come from. What do you expect from me? It's like you almost have no worth already. So it almost gives you that pass to just not try because you're already kind of growing up with the self-loathing of, you know, look at who my family is, look at what we've done. And then to know that your whole race is considered that, like that leads into some dark places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. According to AmericanAddictionCenters.org, the rate of Native Americans with an alcohol use disorder is higher than that of the total population.
Because, I mean, look at all the off comments you hear all the time. Like, oh, you know, I'm out of work on a long day. I need a drink. I need a drink to relax. Oh, my God, my kids are finally in bed. I need a drink. If you can treat your everyday like little things and like be like, okay, I need a drink. Now imagine what it's like to have all these consistent, persistent issues like just beating you down. It's like, of course you're going to, you know, turn to comfort like where you can get it. I mean, that's what addiction does. Like it's your comfort.
Turn to comfort where you can get it cheaply too.
Yep.
So
trailer there goes sees his dad.
Trailer then goes to see his dad, the grandpa who found the fish, who's scared about the dead fish he caught that morning because they're moving like they're alive. They burn the fish and Trailer makes his dad a deputy. He's like, here's a badge. You're now a deputy. Go get my chainsaw dad friend who I cannot wait.
I love him.
Oh, yeah. The guy that plays Trailer's dad was an MMA trainer and still is today.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, he was awesome.
They said they had a really hard time finding that position to do the stunts and could act. They found him and they were like, all right, come on in.
Yeah. Yeah. Him with that sword. I was like, oh, yes, just keep going.
Also, like trying to find actors for First Nation Indigenous people movies. Like,
yeah.
It's a small pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. We then meet Joseph and Lysol in jail, where we learn Joseph is the good kid who has a pregnant teenage girlfriend, and Lysol is the classic fuck-up. Joseph purposely got himself arrested so Dad would get them both out and not just leave Lysol there to rot in jail like he left him when he was a child. What are your thoughts on the relationship between Joseph and Lysol?
I think this question is going to need to be asked towards the end of the film.
Okay.
Because they go through a lot, and one obviously makes changes, and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, right now, you're scratching the surface of what their relationship is, but you see that Joseph has this draw to have familial connections.
Yeah.
You know, he does know that he messed up, and he's saying about how much he loves his girlfriend, and even though, you know, she's thinking of getting an abortion, like he's there. He cares about the people that he loves. He wants to be there despite the fuck up they might be. He's like, you know what? You're my family. So, yeah, this is the very surface level beginnings of it.
And then Lysol is complete opposite, who hates them all. Somewhat cares for Joseph, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As the towny cop and Trailer go to let the kiddos out, there is a dude also in the cell that turns into a zombie and attacks them. Joseph gets bit, but they're able to get away from the zombie, which they don't know what's going on right now. I like how people are already turning into zombies and getting bit, and I'm at this point immediately concerned about who's going to turn into a zombie.
I was like, you know, shouldn't they be a little more concerned about this guy profusely puking up that amount of blood? I was like, we should be slightly more concerned about this.
Nah, that's a classic Vegas night. It's normal.
Yeah, that towny cop was amazing.
Yeah, he was pretty funny.
He definitely played a nice, like, side villain in a way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, even the way that he was, like, treating Joss and Trailer, he's like, oh, your kid gets picked up more than a prostitute, and, you know, just kind of belittling them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, your family is a bunch of fuck-ups. Like, let me rub it in your face.
There's a theme in this movie of the natives versus the townies.
Yeah, and then I love that this guy, the cop, his name is Sham. Joseph calls him Shamu. I love it. But he was, yeah, he was saying that the reason that he was brought in, he was saying, you know, he vandalized a little old lady's car from our side of the line. So it's a very, very much like, even though they're,
us,
you know, they're
them.
Both. Yeah. Yep. Even though they're both cops and, you know, everybody has that mentality of like the cop brotherhood and everything. It's still us versus them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the next scene, we learn about a native who has been calling for an ambulance for at least 12 hours. Trailer goes to see this guy, Sugar, who I was like, did they call him Sugar?
Yeah, I thought it was Sugar, not yeah. Sugar.
Do, 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 do. Oh, honey, honey.
So Sugar is high, and he has a girlfriend who's also a white girl and pregnant, just like Charlie, Joseph's girlfriend. But when Trailer goes upstairs to see what's up, we find the girlfriend eating the baby.
So cool. It was so well done.
This is a really good scene. And Sugar was one of the best actors in this film.
He really was.
Has no time. And there's supposed to be little fingernails, little yellow teeth. They're going out.
Of course, you're high. Stupid cocksucking fuckface. You should have just called a cab right away.
I ain't got no money left. And nobody's going to let us into their house and use their phone. And they don't like her hot chief because she's white.
Is she all right at least?
No. She's definitely not all right, chief. I ain't got no more coke here. I don't want any more. I don't want any more.
I swear to God, if you don't get a hold of yourself, I'm going to kick your ass off the face of this fucking planet. Where is she?
Yeah, upstairs to the left. I think I left it open, maybe. And then in the back room. Yeah, upstairs to the left. She said the baby needed to eat with the mouth.
What?
Yeah, with the mouth.
The way that woman just drops the baby's corpse and turns around was terrifying.
Like, I knew what was coming from the clues given preceding the scene. I knew exactly what was coming. And then seeing her holding the baby with like those little tiny feet. I've had two newborns. So that is extremely accurate in how a newborn looks. And that I was like, oh my God, my heart just sank. And then I didn't expect to see more than that. You never see more than that. And
no.
They fucking went there. You just see her hold it and drop it. I was like, what the fuck did I just see?
I like at this point, too, he's like hitting like the very classic zombie movie tropes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Barnaby did such a good job with all the zombie tropes.
Yeah.
So good.
I have a quick question, though. So Sugar was saying that, you know, he was kind of mumbling and babbling and he was like, she's had it or something. And then he was saying, you know, little yellow teeth where the fingernails should be. And she was saying that it has to eat, but there was no mouth. So was this baby being born like off or like what?
I don't think the baby was ready to be born, but died because they're drug addicts. So it was alive.
Okay. All right.
Like,
cause that was
came
my other...
out of her and then she just ate it. That's how I interpreted it.
That makes sense. And also I was reading an interview with Jeff Barnaby and he was saying that his wife comes from the Navajo Nation and there's a lot of cancer among them because they're by all the uranium mines. So I was also wondering if, you know, that was like his way to, you know, put into there about the conditions in which people live and how, you know, I mean, we've seen those movies where it's like, oh, radiation, like now you're a fucking mutant. So I wonder
Toxic
if that
Avenger.
Was, yeah, I mean, your explanation makes a lot of sense, but the way that the baby was described, after reading his interview, I was like, I wonder if that kind of fed into that scene.
The interview I watched with Jeff Barnaby about this film was about an hour long, and it changed a lot of perspectives. And there's parts my perspectives on the film, and there's a lot of parts where he talks about, like, a non-First Nation person watching this will probably interpret it, this scene, as this, and, and a First Nation person will interpret it as this, and I was like, well, you nailed it on the head, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it at all.
Yeah. Trailer gets bit, Shooker gets bit, they're driving, and Doris, our lovely operator who's just a voice on the radio.
I love her.
Is telling them, don't get bit. Like, there was like another scene with Jess in the hospital being like, where's all the tetanus stuff? And the other nurse is like, everyone's claiming about, you know, getting these bites. And we kind of see like a zombie outbreak in the hospital. As Trailer and Shooker are driving, they're on the bridge and they encounter an ambulance that is carrying Joseph, Joss, Charlie, and a few zombies. Fighting ensues. Chainsaw Zaddy shows up to the party. New chain, new chain. I was so excited.
Right?
That Chainsaw Bumper shows up.
Oh, it was great. It was so great.
Yeah. Grandpa shows up and lets everyone know that the dead are coming back to life.
No shit, Grandpa.
That is just the first 30 minutes.
Can I just say, it's so wonderful to watch this movie and see all of the main characters be of indigenous descent.
Yep.
Because if this were any other movie, the only character that would have been indigenous would have been the grandfather. He would have been the one with like the knowledge and know the land and come in with his little quips and like, oh, I got a new chainsaw. The dead are coming back to life. And
his son would have been Nicolas Cage. And
I mean, he was still he was still a cool ass, like, wise character. But it's like that's not the only representation. And it's so nice to see that.
Yeah.
You know, this for the first 30 minutes of this film are, I think, phenomenal. From the opening shots with the weird camera angles floating through the town to the very fast-paced pickup of this film is just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go right into it. It's just like action, exposition, info. You're going to learn about these relationships. So much happens in 30 minutes, and I didn't want to take up an hour of y'all's time just to talk about the first 30 minutes.
But here we are.
So, 6 months later, they're living in the zombie apocalypse. We see the front gate to a community fortress where Lysol is thriving as the gatekeeper with a cool, spooky mask and a sword axe like scepter situation. Charlie, Joseph, and Shooker show up with some white refugees looking for safety. There's a dad carrying his daughter who got bit and another person who Lysol recognizes. Dun dun dun. A gal named Lilith. Spooky. Lysol immediately wants to shoot the daughter because he's like, check for bites. If you have a bite, you're done. But Charlie, being the pregnant, you know, soon to be mom, she's like, she tries to stop him. Everyone's getting hot. Trailer shows up to bring decorum. Lysol's like, do you want to open up the floodgates and let them stay? And then Trailer's like, no. And then he asks Charlie, like, how do you even keep arranging this? To which she responds, we're supposed to be helping people. That's what I'm doing. And I love Trailer's response of, we're not supposed to be doing anything. We're supposed to be surviving.
So good.
Yep.
Trailer then talks to Bumper, who's Chainsaw Zaddy. Yep.
Chainsaw Daddy.
In their native language about the sick girl. And surprise, surprise, the white dad is all mad and he's like, speak English. What are you saying? Speak English.
I know. A real Karen. Oh my God. Seriously. As soon as I heard that, I bust out laughing because I was like, the amount of times that I have witnessed this happen to people. And it's like, excuse me, read the room. Where are you right now? It's like me going to China and yelling at them, speak English. It's like,
Oh, that'd be that would just be very American of you, Holly.
That is true.
I've seen American people do that in other countries.
Oh my god. But I also love this scene because there's like the classic power dynamic that you get within an apocalypse film. Like you get Lysol, who is, no exceptions. These are the rules. And then the people who are like, but we do want to help. We need to protect what we have. You don't have to be a dick about it. And you know that those are going to clash at some point. And there's a clear difference in how within their own group, they see people. Like, I forgot who it was. I think it was Charlie. She took the guy away and whoever it was, they were like, you don't want to see her turn because she was bit. And they were like, they led him away and was like, you don't want to see her turn. And then, somebody else who is right there with Lysol the whole time is like, you don't want to see what he does with that axe. Like, it was nice to be like, it's helpful and compassionate to be like, no, you don't want to see, like, keep them in your memory. You don't want to see them like that versus, what's going to happen. Like, have that picture of that axe impaled into your daughter's head.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a clear line of like how they see each other and how they see each other in conjunction with the white survivors that they're bringing in.
I like that girl that's like Lysol's right-hand woman.
Yeah.
Devery Jacobs, who is a really solid actress, and you may recognize her from the Netflix series, The Order.
And she is
also
in that.
Yep. And she also stars in Rhymes for Young Ghouls.
Oh, I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was really good.
But I like how after this, she walks the white dude in, and he's carrying the blanket. And she's like, you can't bring this in here, and just throws it in the fire. And I was just like, man, this is us bringing back some things that they taught us in high school about what terrible atrocities we've done to the poor natives.
Yeah. Again, it's like what I was saying earlier with Blood Quantum Laws. It's like you want to be compassionate to everybody and understand the real dilemma of like what history has done and how that has, quote, diluted bloodlines. But you also need to protect your people and, protect what you have. So it's a very confusing, difficult situation to be thrust into.
Yeah, this one scene, there's a variety of things to unpack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is where we learn that the Red Crow folks are immune to bites and thus don't become zombies. They're taken in refugees when they clearly don't have to. They could literally be like, LOL, F you. That's what you get. And the refugees still give them shit and demand that they still assimilate by speaking English. Ugh. And then wait, there was something on the doors too. Like when they brought him in and then they shut the doors.
Yeah, those doors leading into the compound, it says if they're red, they're dead. If they're white, they bite.
So much more to unpack now.
Oh, yeah.
From the blanket scene, from this, from the English scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if you don't know any backstory about anything and you watch this movie, you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is just like a, like you said, Holly, like power dynamic apocalyptic scene.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like, oh my god, there's so much here. Like,
yep.
Yeah, because in that documentary about the incident at Restigouche, one of the native folks was saying or was commenting about like, I don't know why this fishing thing is a thing because we're here, we're gonna share, like we're always sharing. And I was like, oh my god, you are too pure of heart and your honor. And I just, it's just so unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, a perfect situation where, you have Lysol who's like, it's on or off, it's zero or one. It's like, if they're bit, they're out of here. Don't take the white people. Like, why would you put our community in danger? Like, mm-hmm. We're immune. We're safe. We're good. We just need to fight them. Trailer comes in and he's, I could see he's like in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He has that mentality of like, we're here to share. There's a balance. This earth is for everybody, not just one person. And I'm like, I can't.
I know, right?
So the person that Lysol recognized, Lilith, is getting checked by Joss, who is the community nurse. This person definitely lies about not getting bit because they have a big old bite on their stomach.
Yeah, which this scene bothered me because she put gloves on to like check her and then just let her walk out into a compound.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed in Joss with that. I was like, come on now. I feel like that this is a big oversight.
Yeah, you're like one of the smartest characters in this entire film.
Yeah.
But that was a bad call. That was a bad call.
Yeah. Zombie Nurse 101, check for bites.
Yeah, everyone's going through a rough time. And even if they look like they're going through a rough time, frisk their ass down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, sorry, this is going to be intrusive, but we'll make it private. I need to do a body check.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You can stay here and undress and let me check for bites, or you can leave. It's that easy.
Yep.
So the next scene is trailer status recap, which I love because I love getting, okay, what's happening?
Yeah.
Give me the details. And he updates his team / the viewer, us, on how they're handling the zombies and staying safe. I mean, it's like, okay, we got maps. Let me tell you, we got this. We got Bumper's body shredder, which was absolutely amazing. And
that was so
one
great.
Of the coolest things in this entire movie.
The coolest thing. Okay, so he's like, we got our perimeter check. We've got our, you know, our people on guard. And the bridge, this like J.C. Van Horn bridge that connects Campbellton to the reserve where people are just walking across, they have set up a massive shredder where it's...
Is it an auger? What's an auger?
I think it's just a tree shredder.
I'm making motions that nobody can see but Patrick and Stephanie. I'm doing this.
Holly is rotating her hands down as if she's picking up potatoes from the ground.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that you like... I'm sorry for any of our agriculture folks who listen. But it's like on like a cylinder, and it's got like a big blade in a spiral, and the zombies are pretty much just walking right into it.
But it turns horizontally like this. It's like two that move horizontally as if the earth rotation, and it sucks them in and kills them.
It's the best zombie fighting device that I have seen.
Yeah, that dude's chilling up there drinking a beer, hanging.
Just drinking a beer, laughing. I'm like, oh my God, this is the job.
Yeah. Also in Trailer's Plan, he's reminding folks that moose and deer are clean, but anything out of the water is bad meat.
I wonder why.
Incident at Restigouche.
Ah.
Yeah. That documentary is sprinkled all over this film. Then we have Joseph and Charlie giving us a nice, cute, romantic exposition and insight into Lysol's current emotional state, and we get more info on his childhood trauma that turned him from an Alan into a Lysol.
This was a good conversation. Joss and Trailer were talking about being parents, and they're saying that Trailer said specifically, like, oh, he got the part of me that gets drunk and shits off of bridges. I mean, as a parent, you just hope that your kids get the best of you. Like, you just want better. Yeah, you fuck up a bunch and you just hope that your kid can get the best parts of you. So when they fuck up, it's not going to be as bad. I think, especially for Joss and Trailer being in the situation that they're in, the social situation that they're in, their hope for him, amplifying that thought of like their hope of getting the best parts of them, that it's going to be enough to have others see past his skin color and his heritage and see who he is.
You're hitting the feels, Holly. Sorry. It's true, though. It's like you can't really add on to that. You hit it on the head.
Yeah. And then we have this scene. As the crew is gearing up to clean up a gas station from zombies and some person named Rob Muppet, Lysol is expressing his anger about all the refugees they've taken in and how they outnumber the natives, and any one of them is a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, this was an awesome, awesome scene. Also, you know, maybe working in mental health, it's easier to understand the reasons why being in mental health and being of Native descent, like, I can put these two things together. You know, Lysol really fears having to go back to what was, you know, like having to go back to the people across the bridge looking at him and saying, oh, he's in the drunk take again. He gets arrested more than a prostitute. And finally, after how many hundreds of years, like, finally you get some, not even recognition, because there's nobody left to recognize you. You're finally, you know, feeling like you're worth something, but still hanging on to all that anger, unchecked trauma, that generational trauma. Like, it plants a seed that, unfortunately for Lysol, he can't get past that. Whereas other people are able to see this as a, like, okay, now we need to kind of come back together, get back to basics, kind of. Unfortunately, Lysol is hanging on to so much anger. He talks about being free, and yet he's still drinking constantly. He's still holding on to a gun. He's still smoking. He's still snorting whatever he was snorting. Is he really free? Like, if he's holding on to all that anger about, you know, like, what white people did to him and like everybody else, like all of his people, then is he really free? Or is he just continuing this oppression blindly?
In the interview I watched with Jeff Barnaby, he kind of describes what you're describing. And he says, like, a white person watching this is going to have a different thought process than a First Nations person watching this. And when he went into it, I was like, yeah, I had a wholly different mindset of what you were trying to interpret. You know, I haven't never gone through such a deep-rooted generational thing. That's what made me appreciate this film even more after hearing him talk about that. I was like, man, I went back and watched, you know, a scene here and there before we did this, and that was one of the scenes I rewatched. And also, he mentioned the party scene, like why he added this party scene.
Ooh, okay, so let's get into that party scene. Real quick, the dad crew are going to go clean out this Muppet situation where they have gas, and Grandpa whips out his samurai, giving us the classic zombie line of, you don't have to reload a sword.
Badass.
Love that, right?
Love it. Thanks, Michonne.
Yes! Lysol announces a party at his place because the res is clean, so let's celebrate, and the dad crew can, like, go enjoy their own recreation of killing zombies. So Lysol's having a party.
I mean, why Jeff Barnaby added this scene in is not that, like, great of a reasoning why he added the scene. It was just because he was like, all they did on the reservation was party, and they would just go from party to party to party, and he's like, that's why I added it in. It just brought me back to my days doing that.
This actually, Lysol's story is like a great setup for a good joke. It's like, I want to hear this like delivered in a joke form rather than just like somebody's like tale of like, this actually happened to me. I want to hear this as a joke because it could be delivered really well.
So at Lysol's party, he shares the story of when he got arrested in the beginning of the movie. I was not expecting this. So he goes on to tell to his like friends, and Joseph is there, like keeping an eye on him, that he was going down on a girl, gets a call that his buddies are
Lilith.
Yeah.
The girl
at
the party.
Lilith.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's going down on Lilith because he's like, that girl got me in trouble. Gets a call that his buddies got into a fight and were arrested. So he heads to the police station where the cops take one look at him and arrest him too. And he's like, why? And the cop's like, well, it's clearly you've been fighting too because you have blood all over your face.
Da-doom-tsh.
So Joseph calls it repugnant, but then Moon comes in, who's just the local drunk in the reserve, admits, at my age, you've done it on purpose at least once. 50 times by mistake.
Oh, Moon.
Classic Moon.
First of all, no one ever talks about this, but this is a thing that happens. Okay, people going down on gals when they're on their period and not knowing it and looking like a vampire. Also, thank you, Jeff Barnaby, for not completely shaming that when that happened.
Right? Yeah.
I know Joseph was like, oh, that's like repugnant. But Lysol was like, LOL, it's something that happened. And, you know, Moon comes in and he's like, 50 times by mistake. Having a period is just, it's referred to as like, ew, disgusting. Like, oh my God, tampons. Oh, you know, maxi pads. Like, ooh. And here's a situation where they're like, it's normal. It happens. LOL. Uh-huh. Whoops.
I know. I really appreciate that. It's not like a ew, like, oh, this happens, we can't talk about it, but it's,
how do you not talk about it though?
No, it goes into more of that, this, it's a natural thing. Native Americans are all about being in tune with nature and the earth and yourself, and it's like, hey, yes, people with vaginas, they bleed, and hey, some might get on your face once in a while.
Why is there such a stigma in, like, still today with conservatives and, I guess, more conservative people with periods?
I don't know. I mean, people literally, I feel like there are women would be, like, banished temporarily until they were, like, done with their periods or their cycles.
Yeah.
Like, it was always looked at as something.
The moon rituals.
Yeah. Yeah. It was always looked at as something like awful, but it's like, I'm sorry. Like, my body can build a human, and if I bleed once a month, deal with it. Like,
right?
I wonder why it was thought as awful.
I grew bones, so fuck y'all.
Yeah. Thank you for, you know, the pro period piece of this movie.
Yes.
You know what it is? It's also like when a person's like, oh, are you on your period?
I know.
Oh, that's
why?
Annoying.
Oh, are you angry because you're on your period? It's like, no, but now I'm angry because you fucking said it.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you PMSing?
Well, now I am. Thanks a lot.
So this lovely scene fades into Moon giving a speech about how the earth is a living, breathing animal. White men don't understand that, and the planet is so sick of our shit, and that's why zombies exist.
Yes, this is what I wanted to tie back into in the beginning animation, because in the beginning, there was that pregnant woman and then like the vines like reaching down like roots and everything. And in the background of all that, on the right-hand side, you saw it was like a red sky, and you see all these, like the silhouette of like a cityscape, and it's like all like there's smoke and everything. It looks like it's all on fire. And then on the left-hand side, it's like a burnt-looking forest, like all the leaves and everything. It's like they just like look all charred and black and everything. So all that is going on in the background, and then there's this drawing of a beautiful pregnant woman, and you see like inside of her stomach like the baby and like all the roots coming down. I think that this speech ties into that animation, because all that stuff in the background, like the burning buildings, the desolate forest, burning forest, that's all because of what people have done to the earth. They have not respected the earth, and so, you know, all of this is happening. And then you have this depiction of this woman with like long flowing dark hair and like giving birth to life. I mean, like, you see like all the greenery and everything that's coming out and like coming through the roots. You know, fire and water, they're the great cleansers. It's like a fire had to come and cleanse, and he had to get back down to the people who know this earth for what it is and take care of it and cultivate it again. Because without that love and, you know, that nurturing of the earth, then it's just going to die. Like, people can go on, but, you know, the earth is not an infinite resource. And if you don't nurture the earth like you would a pet or a human or a plant, then it's going to die.
this movie, you know, it talks obviously about the story of colonialism and all that, but it also talks heavily on the climate crisis.
Yes.
I mean, there are so many political angles in this movie. He did such a great job, because if you want to look at this as a zombie movie, you can ignore all it and watch it as a zombie film.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
But if you want to get to the nitty gritty and the deep dives of this, then you can see it for every political statement he's making in the film, and it still plays out beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, this beautiful speech fades into Lilith eating Lysol's dick.
It was a great scene.
It really was.
I love when she just like turns around. She's just like,
I know. Just gnawing on it.
This is the point where the pacing changes for me.
Yeah.
And it's not even like the pacing just becomes inconsistent at this point of the film for me.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't lose anything for me, but I definitely noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it goes from Lilith eating Lysol's dick and then an animation of a character that looks like Lysol transitioning into fire and rage. And then the next scene is the dad crew killing zombies in a really awesome, like, kick-ass way.
Yeah, I like the whole Zed's dead. I'm like, yeah, Pulp Fiction.
That was a cool scene.
It was, yeah. I was super rad, but you had this beautiful speech, and then, you know, Lilith eating the life out of Lysol, who didn't die, I don't know how.
And also then a nice parallel to his story, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then this animation where you think, like, okay, something, like, related to this life, zombies gonna happen, and it just goes into, like, a really cool, super killing zombie scene. I mean, it was a great scene where they kill, like, 15 zombies, but it was, like, it took me out of this whole, like, speech and earth connection.
Yeah, I feel like the scenes like just need a little bit of shifting or something, or just a little more editing to flow a little better.
One thing Barnaby said was, because the budget was so tight, he chose what scenes to do multiple takes on and what scenes not to. I don't know what scenes he only did one take on and what scenes he didn't. So he may have not been working with enough footage to move things around, and that's why the pacing changed.
That's fair.
It does take a dramatic turn right here. Now, I'm not going to knock it because it's a extremely well-shot indie film.
Yeah.
Extremely well-shot. The coloring is fantastic, but it does get some speed bumps at this point.
Yes.
So Lysol loses it, naturally, as I'm sure any guy would do if their personal situation was eaten.
You know what all I could think about during the scene was? He's been drinking so much liquor and booze, like, he's gonna have to pee and it's going to hurt.
Oh, no.
Like, they're still, it's just gonna be painful.
Yeah, it is.
The anatomical logistics didn't make sense, but it was okay. Any of the, like, blood scenes in this movie just...
There was a copious amount of blood, and I really loved it.
Yeah. Add more blood.
Yeah. At one point, it was just, like, pooling down. I was like, all right, come on, more.
And there isn't... What was the second one? Day of the Dead?
No, Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead. There's a very nice nod to that at the end of this movie.
Yes, yeah.
Which I really appreciate it.
So Lysol loses it, and instead of killing Lilith, who is clearly a zombie, brings her to the camp and demands that Joseph get all the white folks to the hall because it's us or them. Moon lets Lilith loose into the community and chaos ensues.
Oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
So also, like, you know, he had to leave some white people behind to turn into zombies at this point. Or else why were there so many zombies? So how did he only take like 10% of the white people in the camp and left everyone else? Or else there would be no zombies.
Oh, right. Well, the dad crew show dad up crew. after their killing spree, and Trailer's like, how many did we take in? And someone's like, 100, 150. So there's at least 100 zombies. So yeah, Lysol ended up taking only like 25, 10 people.
Yeah,
like a handful of folks to the church, which anyway, we'll get there. Yeah, so the dad crew get in. They manage to save the key players, Joss, Joseph, and Charlie. And so sad. Trailer, being the chief, being the main dad that he is, sacrifices himself and turns into a blood fountain. It's
My
like
God.
Spewing blood every part of his body as the zombies are tearing him apart.
I would love one of those at my wedding.
You know, I have to say I love the relationship between Joss and Trailer. Like,
yeah.
Clearly they are not together anymore, but they have this, they don't even have to spell it out. They're still parenting Joseph and they're still working together. You know, whatever ideas she has about Lysol, she's still there. They have a good relationship. And, you know, when he's like, you know, tell my grandchild big stories about me. You know, that's what Joss, she said earlier, like, I used to tell Joe, like, stories about his grandfather and all these things that he did. And storytelling is such a big way of connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially amongst Native Americans, like, storytelling, like, that's how you pass down legends, your culture, your language, everything. It's all through verbiage. His request, like, tell big stories about me, that just hurt my heart in a way that I haven't felt before.
I don't know, because even, like, after this part with the grandfather.
Oh, I know.
Mm-hmm.
You get connected to these characters, and you don't want them to go, but I'm happy. I'm not happy they died, but it really does add to the story. It makes it a little more realistic than having them survive, because there needs to be casualties. It's a zombie movie.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of zombies. There has to be
yes.
casualties. I'm just happy. I think I would have been more affected with Joss dying than Trailer.
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, Joss is such a nurturer, and Trailer is definitely the
yeah.
I don't give a fuck kind of
yeah.
I'm the sheriff. I'm going to like take care of business and I'm going to be
yeah.
super grizzled the whole time.
For the end of the movie, it makes more sense to have Joss around.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, another character who we finally get to meet, but unfortunately sees her demise, is our radio gal, Doris.
No.
Yeah.
She didn't deserve this.
Oh,
no, she didn't.
Who's that character in Twin Peaks who the guy always records messages to? Diane, right?
Oh, Diane, yeah.
Yeah. Doris is like the Diane in this, but Doris actually like just, you know, chimes in on the radio. But we don't meet her until this scene. And we see that she's tied up, guns are pointed at her, and like Lysol and his crew are forcing her to radio Trailer to come to the church. But she does, and then they unleash a zombie to kill her.
What the fuck?
We also forgot to mention that Lysol stabs Joseph before all this.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You too, Brute.
Oh, man. In the back.
Yeah. That's why I don't think he's that good of a brother.
No.
He literally decided, like, you're on that other side. You must be left behind.
Yep.
You're on the other line that I'm on.
We didn't really touch on this very much, but it also has to do with the fact that Charlie, Joseph's girlfriend, is white.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
She even says, you know, people like at the compound, she's like, people look at me here and, you know, they don't know like what this baby is going to be. And everybody's scared of me. I mean, Joseph, he's like, she is not a bad decision. Like, I love her and fuck it. I don't care if she's white. And to a lot of people, that seems to be a betrayal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the church,
oh,
whatever.
Before you get to the scene, this
okay.
church scene, this is where they had to stop filming. So they stopped filming right here to do all the scenes because there's some weird rule in Canada where you have a radius that you can film in. And once you leave that area that you're allowed to film in, prices of things double.
What?
Actors pays double, commission.
Oh, man.
So they went back to this whole area and they ran out of funding. So they just stopped production.
Oh, no.
And they started up production, started planning everything because they thought they were going to get the ball rolling. They got funding 3 days before the shoot.
Wow.
Crazy. I forget what he called what the term is for the Canadian film industry out there, but I thought it was really interesting. Like, you can only film here. Once you leave this area, prices change. It's like, what?
Sounds like a bullshit white person's rule.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, in the church, whatever survivors are left are tied, and Moon is pouring gas all around. He's singing the weird drunk song and comments that we got a chance to get rid of all these fucking dependents once and for all. Moon gets a samurai sliced from behind by good old grandpa.
Very cool scene.
That was so yes. good.
I was so disappointed in Moon, and then that happened. I was like, all right, I feel better now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, outside with Josh and Charlie, Bumper gets stabbed by Lysol, which I was so sad. I was like, no, my chainsaw Zeddy!
I know!
Lysol, who brought another zombie to the party, and that zombie bites Charlie. Josh manages to shoot and hit Lysol, but Lysol is still alive at this point.
Guy won't die. Gets his dick bit off, gets shot in the stomach, right? And he's just like, I'm not dead yet.
All right, knowing the formula of typical horror movies, I didn't foresee Charlie getting bit.
I didn't either.
I thought it was going to be one of those like, oh my God, there's a zombie on top of her and she's going to be freaking out and she'll be fine. But no, I was wrong.
I didn't either.
I was pleasantly wrong.
And then I guess we'll get into it towards the end, but I did not see her getting bit.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they were killing off all sorts of characters.
That is true.
So
yeah, but Charlie, you know, she's preggo. About to have a daughter.
I mean, I guess they didn't take into consideration the other scene that involved another pregnant woman. So I guess I should have known better.
Yeah.
Well, Joseph gets his revenge and stabs Lysol and brings him out to an open field or something. And Grandpa fires a gun to call the zombies who eat Lysol.
This is that nod to Dawn of the Dead. This is so well done. I mean, his body was being ripped apart and he was still alive, which I was like, oh, he'd be dead at this point. But it was really cool seeing them eat the entrails and rip out the stomach and rip him open. It was cool. Really well done.
Yeah, and all the like drone shots that they had. Yeah. You could see the like the people running, the zombies running to go eat Lysol. Joss, Charlie, Joseph, and Grandpa make it to the river, and we see Sugar rolling up with a boat. They all make it on the boat, but Grandpa stays back to slay some zombies, which I was like, of course. He's like, I'm not leaving this land.
That's what he said. I'm never leaving this land again.
Yeah.
Because earlier they showed him, it was a picture of him like in the army or something.
Yeah, I think it was World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably
and then
Japan.
Like, I'm never leaving this land again. I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah. And then cue another animation where he's slaying zombies and killing it and just picks up the head and he's like, no.
Fuck yes.
So good. Surprise, surprise, Charlie gives birth in a boat. She knows that she'll soon turn into a zombie, so she reluctantly holds her baby, but quickly gives her back to Joseph.
The thought of having to give birth during an apocalypse of any kind is horrifying. Oh, God, just this scene of poor Charlie, like, you know, she finally gives birth and then Joseph's all, you know, hold her, and she wants to, but she's so scared that she's gonna hurt her baby.
Yeah, so Charlie knows that she'll soon turn into a zombie, so she reluctantly holds her kid, but quickly gives her back to Joseph, because she's like, I can feel myself turning.
Yeah, and it was, God, just her, like, Charlie saying, you know, just love her, you know, like, we did it. You know, the baby is okay. There's nothing wrong with her. So, you know, her just coming to terms with the fact that, yes, she is about to die, but she is with her father and, like, just love her. I'm like, oh, my God, Charlie, I had no feelings really for you this whole movie. You were kind of cool. I didn't really want you to die, but now it's like, don't die.
She was such a background character.
Yeah,
super background character. But an okay, like an appropriate background character. Like, I'm glad that she wasn't like more prominent because it was like, it's not about you.
Exactly. Yes. Gee, it's not always about the white girl. Sorry, Stephanie.
No, seriously, no. Seriously, like, it's not a white girl damsel in distress story. No.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Joseph shoots her. Hot damn.
Yeah.
And then he has a really bad cry, which I was like, you're not that good of an actor. Sorry.
Yeah.
Just put some of that salt water in your eyes.
Yeah.
And the movie ends with Joss holding and smiling down at her grandbaby.
Aww.
And scene.
And also that last scene, again, full circle with the beginning animation, pregnant woman at the end holding new life. Yeah.
A lot of people compared it to Children of Men.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I definitely thought the same thing. Yep. On a boat, floating away. Another, you know, minority person who was fleeing for their lives.
What a great movie. Children of Men and this one. Both are great movies.
I do want to add one more thought about the documentary.
Okay.
The documentarian, I want to say her name is Alanis Obomsawin, but I heard another person pronounce it like Alanis Obomsawin, so I apologize. I'm not sure the correct way to pronounce it, but she wanted to interview the Minister of Fisheries because it's, you know, a documentary about his decision to raid the reserve. And the NFB, the National Film Board of Canada, was like, no, you can't. But she went and did it anyway because she's amazing. According to Wikipedia, when confronted by NFB management about her disobedience, she told them that no one would tell her whom to interview, and that while white people had interviewed natives for years, the opposite had never been true. So she was like, what?
That clap back.
Yes.
NFB management relented and Obomsawin was free to complete her film with relatively little interference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Relatively little.
They were like, oh, okay, fine. You're right.
Oh, sorry.
God.
I know.
Good for her. Good job.
Yeah.
So good. Seriously, watch that documentary. So, how are we going to rate this movie?
Gutted salmon.
Okay. Holly?
Okay. I'm going to give this 4.5 gutted salmon. Maybe a little entrail still kind of dangling out a little bit. This was so much better than I had any idea it was going to be. I thought it was going to be some cool, kitschy, like, yeah, it's a zombie movie and it has this background. And that is not what I saw. I saw a good history lesson, you know, if you're willing to do your homework and, you know, read up about it. I saw amazing representation. And, you know, for all those people saying that it doesn't matter, it fucking does. It really does. Yes, this movie has issues that we've talked about, mainly the pacing. But overall, I loved how you can watch this just as a straight zombie movie, or you can look at it through a lens of, you know, you've done your homework, you know history, and this has so many more layers to it. So yeah, if you want a fun popcorn movie, this is great. And if you want to really dig deep into some stuff, then do your homework.
I'm going to give this bad boy 4 gutted salmon. I was not expecting this movie to be as good as it was. Jeff Barnaby knows what he's doing as a filmmaker. I mean, he edited this film. He made the music for this film. He shot this film. He wrote this film. He did all the hard work, and it shows. The shots are phenomenal. The lighting is great. The color correction is amazing. The color tones in the film, the sets, the costumes, it all works. There is issues with some pacing, especially towards the end. But I don't think it kills the movie. You know, and the acting sometimes doesn't hold up in some scenes. But overall, this was a very enjoyable film to watch. And Indigenous First Nation people, Native Americans are not represented in film. So it was awesome seeing that as well.
I, too, am going to give this 4 gutted salmon. echoing pretty much everything what y'all said, yeah, the first time I watched this, I definitely had white girl lens on, but I watched it with my girlfriends. We do like a Skype massacre Mondays, and we were all like, oh, look at that. Ooh. And we all really enjoyed it. Same issues. A little pacing was weird. And some of the acting was like, ooh, a little bad, but we were all pleasantly surprised. Then going and doing research and, you know, watching that documentary, I was like, holy cow, Jeff Barnaby, you packed in so much into an hour and 37 minutes. The second time I watched it with way more attention, and I appreciated so much more of the dialogue and the interaction and all the little things that he had in there. I also just want to give a shout out that the local strip club is called Fish Mittens.
Hell yeah.
that's a reference to something else. I read what it was a reference to, but I completely forgot. Somebody tell us, because I forgot.
I believe Fish Mittens is also in Rhymes for Young Ghouls.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, what a movie. That's Blood Indeed. Quantum. Go watch it.
If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening to our episode on Blood Quantum. You can find tons of links that we're going to provide for resources on our website, beyondthescreams.com. Please check out our Facebook group and page, Beyond the Screams. Follow us on Instagram at beyond_the_screams_podcast. And we are also on Twitter.
It's at beyond_screams.
Stay tuned for the rest of the month for more Native American and Indigenous content.
Hail Satan.
Love the earth.
Everything is blocked off. We got 4-man teams at every blockade. The roads coming in off of 132 and nothing really to worry about. Stragglers still stumbling in from some of the podunk towns on the island. Pretty old and mangled. Don't move as fast, so they've been picking them off easy.
Bodies are starting to pile up faster than we can bury them, so we might have to spark up those pyres again, regardless of who sees them. We're getting the same problem on the bridge. Zed's been coming in towny side nonstop. We're wasting ammo trying to keep them from ramping up the blockade. Bumper found a way around that without having to fire a single shot or mop up a single body. Bigger problem than the dead walking around townies, the live breathing ones. They're coming across in almost the same numbers. Some people in Red Crow don't like it, but we got to do right by survivors.